thing set in stone as yet, but it does seem as if we were having a cosy little tete-a-tete prior to the murder. You know the way it goes. Oh, hello, darling, what a lovely surprise. Come in, kiss, kiss, and how are you? I was just going to have a little glass of vino. Will you join me, won't you? Both women stifled giggles.
Rory, said Nicky, you make the poor kid sound like some drunken old dowager duchess.
Oh, well, I do a much better Barbara Cartland than a teenage pop idol, but you got the general idea, didn't you?
Nicky smiled. Certainly did. Is there anything else to indicate that the killer was a woman?
The height of the attacker, possibly. From the angle of the blow to the head, we are working on a height of around 5'7" or 5'8".
That's the same as the Prospero case.
Nicky looked thoughtful. Exactly.
Well, thank you, Rory. We really appreciate it.
Rory sipped his coffee. I'm still doing tests, so anything else I find will be all yours.
He glanced up at the clock.
Oh, dear, got to go. I say, is that the missing clock from the...
Nicky held up a hand. I know, anything that goes missing seems to find its way here. It's like living with the borrowers.
Ah, so if I'm down a stereo microscope, or maybe a spleen or two, I'll know where to come.
Nicky scratched her head. I wouldn't put anything past my lot.
She looked at Rory.
You're looking chirpier than of late. Have you had good news?
I didn't realize it showed, but yes, I've had a call from David. He's still in the Badlands, but he's safe and out of the area with all the fighting.
Nicky smiled. Thank heavens for that. You will be able to sleep at night now.
Not until he's back home, and I can see him for myself. But thanks. It is a huge relief.
Rory downed his coffee and made for the door, where he gave them a regal wave. Neither of them spoke for a few moments, and then Jill said,
A female killer.
Attacking other females. Jill shook her head.
Weird.
I suppose we shouldn't bank on that. The lipstick could already have been there. Nicky said thoughtfully.
Quite possibly.
But it does add another dimension, doesn't it? What if the killer was a woman? Maybe she'd been refused entry to the club and she's teaching the Briar Patch a deadly lesson.
Jill looked at Nicky. A woman scorned.
Dave spoke from across the room.
Nothing more dangerous.
Well, why not? Said Jill. That might be why she chose Madeline. Didn't you say she was about to be accepted as a new member?
Nicky nodded.
That's right. She sat back and narrowed her eyes. That is a real possibility. After all, we don't look for logical reasoning in a murder, do we? If she was really pissed off at them, then yes. She could be taking her revenge on particular members.
Jill's eyes lit up.
Let's see what your little mole says about that. She might know of someone who has been refused membership recently.
I'll be talking to her later, Nicky said, so I'll ask her.
Great, Jill stretched. Well, at least we have another avenue to explore. Now we can get to some softly interviews with the women who are not on the super's list of untouchables.
She looked at Nicky.
I gathered that your other old case is causing you some trouble too.
Nicky groaned, and Dave provided a distant echo. It's bizarre, and getting odder by the minute. Picture this. A perverted killer drowns himself, but he's found on dry land, stabbed in the back, and his skull caved in. But he might not have been a pervert after all, and the girl he killed may not be dead anyway, so if he didn't...
Whoa! Jill held up her hands. Enough. You can keep that one. And when you've sorted it, do tell me all about it. But until then...
She stood up.
God, my brain aches.
Oh, yours does, grumbled Dave.
When Jill had left, Nicky asked Dave where the others were.
Ben is still checking hotels and guest houses for Millie Cartwright, and Kat and Yvonne have gone back to old Cyril's place. They're anxious to find out more about his daughter Delia's friendship with Avril Hammond.
And Joseph?
He had a call and said he needed to slip out for a while.
Nicky made no comment. She could guess who had called him, and it probably had nothing to do with work. Her face darkened. At some point, Laura would step too far into Joseph's life. Then she would find Nicky Galina waiting for her.
A fine drizzle of rain was drifting in from the North Sea. Cyril Roberts's cottage seemed to be hunched into itself, lonely and miserable. This time they readily accepted his offer of tea. While Cyril filled the kettle, Kat looked around. An almost completed Daily Telegraph crossword sat on the kitchen table, with a dictionary and a well-thumbed thesaurus to one side.
The old man was obviously not prepared to let his brain cells wither from disuse.
"You don't mean to tell me that the paper boy delivers all the way out here?"
Cat pointed at the newspaper.
"I drives into West Saltoby every morning, gets me paper and anything else I need, which ain't too much these days. I spend more on food for the cat than for myself."
"Where is the cat?"
"Probably out ratting. You need a cat in these parts. After the harvest, the mice like to get up in the lofts. My Raffles caught 17 last year after the cutting had finished. But you ain't come to hear about my vermin problem now, have you?"
He poured the tea, while they told him they would like to hear about Avril's friendship with his daughter.
"My Delia was younger than Avril, but me and her dad, being good mates and all, they stayed best friends for years. And Avril Hammond was bright, much cleverer than my girl. According to Gordon, her school report said she would go far."
Cyril thought for a moment.
"Avril didn't mix much. I expect the other kids were a bit boring for her. None of them were too clever, really. She and my Delia went everywhere together."
"Right up until she disappeared?"
"No. My missus forbade Delia to see Avril, a long while before she went missing. She reckoned Gordon had, well, you know, got at her in some way. It was rubbish, of course, but Delia had gone a bit quiet and withdrawn. I knew the two girls met in secret, because I'd seen them. I didn't let on to the wife. After a while, they just found different chums, I suppose. I saw Avril one day in West Saltoby. She said she was going to a dance with some new pals, and we didn't see much of her after that."
"Do you think she was the type of child to run away, Mr. Roberts?"
"She was smart enough, and she was a teenager by then. They get funny ideas, teenagers, but I can't see it myself."
"Why do you think your Delia became withdrawn?"
Yvonne peered at Cyril over the rim of her cup.
"She were growing up, that's all. Girls get bees in their bonnets over things at that age. Boys and stuff, I suppose. She'd been poorly for a while and lost quite a bit of schooling. I know that worried her."
"Nothing like the other children, then? No bruises or cuts and scrapes?"
Cyril stood up abruptly and took his cup to the sink.
"No, nothing at all like that."
Yvonne looked at Cat and changed the subject.
"Mr. Roberts, if Avril didn't run away, have you any idea where she might have gone?"
"None at all. Her mum's sister lived in Cambridge. Snooty lot her side of the family. Didn't like Gordon. And I don't think they had much time for Avril either. No, no idea."
"Mr. Roberts, you said that Avril was brighter than your Delia, but Delia seems to have done very well for herself. She has a high-powered job with a big company, doesn't she? Do you see much of her?"
"You've answered that yourself, Detective Constable. A high-flying job, done too bloody well to bother about me. That, on top of all her mother did to poison her mind. No, I don't see her much at all."
He still had his back to them.
"It's not always what you know, but who you know that gets you where you want to be."
He sounded bitter, and his earlier friendliness seemed to have gone. There was obviously little more to be gleaned here, so they thanked him for the tea and left. Outside in the car, Cat went through her folder until she came to the doctor's file on the abused children.
"Here, listen to this. Delia Roberts. Mother brought her in for a check-up after a bout of tonsillitis. I noticed a considerable change in the child. She was quiet and uncommunicative, whereas before she'd always been chatty and friendly. While examining her throat, I noticed a discoloration around her right wrist. She must have seen me looking at it as she proceeded to pull both sleeves down. I assume from this that there were marks on both wrists. Although I had no time to make a detailed examination, I considered that the marks were consistent with contusions of the skin made by a ligature of some kind. Ivory didn't know what was happening or didn't want to. I wonder if that's why he split with his wife. Over the child, I mean."
Cat looked up from the page.
"Most likely. Did you see his face when I mentioned the other kiddie's injuries? And when he told us that his wife put a stop to the girl's friendship and poisoned her mind."
Cat puffed out her cheeks.
"I wonder if his story will match whatever Delia Roberts has to tell us."
Yvonne turned to her.
"What say we go and find out?" "Why not? We should catch her before she leaves work. Let's go."
Half an hour later, Cat and Yvonne were waiting outside a large glass-fronted conference room. "It's customary to make an appointment, isn't it?" Delia said irritably, sounding nothing like the accommodating woman who had spoken to Nicky and Joseph.
"'I'm so sorry. We would normally, but we happen to be here in the area, and we won't take too much of your time.'
Cat's calm and friendly manner failed to placate Miss Roberts. "'Everyone in the village said that Avril was dead, and that her father had killed her. "'I know no more than that, Detective Constable. "'Look, I've left an important meeting to speak to you. "'I should get back in there.'
"'Delia Roberts nodded towards the large double wooden doors marked boardroom.
"'Cat persisted.
"'We believe that you were Avril Hammond's best friend. Is that true?'
"'Oh, when we were small, I suppose. "'She went her own way as we got older. "'Now, do you think...
"'Would you consider her capable of running away from home?'
"'What? "'Oh, well, surely anyone could run away if things were bad enough.'
"'Yvonne's voice was cool.
"'We aren't talking about anyone, Miss Roberts. "'We're talking about your old friend, Avril Hammond. "'She was a young teenager who may have witnessed awful things "'and then been so terrified of her father that she ran away "'and has not been heard of for 30 years.'
Delia's mouth worked. After a while, and with a stronger, colder voice, she said, "'She's dead, officer, and I can't help you. Now, if you'll excuse me.' They let her go.
Chapter 15 "'I can't just walk out of work like this, Laura. I know you are upset, but you can't expect me to drop everything every time you call.'
Joseph tried to keep the irritation out of his voice. Laura slipped her arm through his, and they continued along the river path.
"'Oh, your wonderful boss will forgive you anything, Joe. And I was desperate.'
Joseph had never known his ex-wife to behave like this. Her character seemed to have changed completely.
"'I have a job to do, Laura, and we are very busy at present. Two murders and another older unexplained death, too. I'm sorry, but this is the last time I do this. Ring me when I'm off duty, but not at work. Are we clear on that?'
"'Sorry, Joe. I won't ring again.' She pulled her arm away and walked a little faster. "'I should have realized. Work always did come first, didn't it?'
"'Laura!'
Joseph caught her up.
"'Please don't start that again. We aren't married any more. We have our own lives. I'm really sorry it's not a good time for you right now, but it will get better. Things go in circles. Your good times will come round again.'
"'So speaketh the expert life coach.'
This was waspish. "'My whole life is devastated. My work and my personal life. I don't need you to pontificate to me, Joe. I just need a friend. That's all.'
Joseph felt exhausted. If only she would go back to Edinburgh. They had moved on years ago, and had only kept in touch because of Tamsin. Now, although he felt sorry for her, she was draining him. He needed to find a way to draw a line without sending her into freefall. They stopped at the town bridge, and he took her arm again.
"'I am your friend, Laura. For Tamsin's sake, I'll always be your friend. But you can't lean on me all the time.'
He looked at her sadly.
"'I'll ring you tonight, okay? We'll talk then.'
"'Darling Joe, I knew I could count on you. Come to my hotel, we'll have a drink, and I'll tell you one or two thoughts that I've had since I've been here.'
She leant forward and brushed his cheek with a fleeting kiss.
"'See you later.'
Joseph watched her go, dreading what her thoughts might be. He hurried back to the station and ran down to the basement.
"'The boss is upstairs in her office, Sarge.' Dave stood up and pushed his chair under his desk. "'I'm off home.'
"'And the others?'
"'Ben's had a bit of luck tracing Millicent at last. He's gone off out again. Then he was going straight back to his digs. Cat and Yvonne are filling the boss in on their visit to Cyril Roberts.'
Joseph nodded. He walked over to his desk and sat down. He couldn't face Nicky right now. He felt like a traitor, although of course he wasn't. It was just that he'd become so caught up with Laura's collapsing life. He felt very tired. How come he could take on murderers, face any flesh-and-blood enemy, but was completely out of his depth when it came to emotional issues? He rubbed his eyes. Before Laura turned up, his life had been almost perfect. He and Nicky had decided what worked for them, and he had been happy. Now it had gone. He needed to find a way back to that happiness, before it disappeared. Lucy Clark sat alone in her tiny flatlet. She had tried to eat some supper, but when she tried to swallow, she retched. And if what she feared was true, things were going to get worse. How long before the police came back? And what if she said something she shouldn't? What if she finally told them what had been haunting her all these years? She closed her eyes. All these years. The fear had her almost paralyzed. Shock had set in, because she simply had not seen it coming. She had heard things, things that the grown-ups whispered about, but she dismissed them as the usual dark warnings that parents always give their kids. She ignored them. but this was real. It was happening to her, and she was terrified.
Now, do you know what happens to little girls who tell tales?
She nodded.
Are you sure about that, Lucy? Because you don't sound very convincing to me.
No, and I don't tell tales.
Was that shaky baby voice my own?
I think we'll go over it again, just to make sure.
She began to shiver.
It would be such a pity. Such an awful pity.
The finger moved very slowly down her cheek, but she was too frightened to pull away. And then it was not a finger, but the cold blade of a wicked-looking knife. The same knife that had just hacked off one of her lovely blonde plaits, her pride and joy.
Think of a peach, Lucy. A soft, juicy, ripe peach. Think of how you peel the peach, the knife sliding beneath the skin and peeling it back from the flesh beneath.
A little laugh.
Can you do that, Lucy? Can you peel a peach?
The knife pressed into her cheek.
Yes, I can. Now please leave me alone. I swear I'll never tell.
Convince me. Convince me that you'll never be a telltale tit.
She didn't know what to do. She couldn't help it. The tears were falling.
Let me go. Please.
Telltale tit. Telltale tit. Do you know what a tit is, Lucy?
The knife moved down her chest and stopped. She knew what the word meant.
Yes.
Then show me.
Lucy pulled her cardigan tighter around her and tried to control her breathing. It was hard to stop the horrible thoughts coming once they had started, but over the years she had found ways to push them back. But she still felt dirty every time the memories gripped her. For years afterwards she had washed obsessively over and over again, but you couldn't wash away the past. It never worked. She wished that the police had never come. They made her frightened, not of them, but of what she might say. One day it could all just come pouring out, and then her fate would be sealed forever. Lucy sighed. Although what could be worse than living life the way it was now?
How did your visit go? Nicky asked.
Could have been better.
Cat looked disheartened.
We upset him. I don't think that man wants to face the truth, even after all these years.
Be as gentle as possible, added Yvonne.
We asked him whether he thought his daughter had been hurt in any way, but he insisted it was just hormones, she was a growing girl and so forth.
Which is contrary to Dr. Draper's report, continued Cat.
And he took great pains to tell us how close Delia and Avril were, until his wife put a stop to their friendship. She forbade Delia to see Avril, but Cyril knew they still met in secret.
Yvonne looked across to Cat.
But then we spoke to Delia Roberts a little later, and she played down the best friends thing. She showed very little interest at all in Avril. All she said rather succinctly was that Avril was dead, end of.
Curious. Nicky wondered which of them was telling the truth.
Cat, do you know if the news about Gordon Hammond's body ever made the national dailies?
Cat shook her head.
There was a three-liner in the Times about a mystery skeleton being found in Lincolnshire, but no one followed it up. The local rags did a few articles on it, but they were never told its identity.
Nicky stretched.
With the exception of you, Cat, we are full steam ahead on the Prospero Lawson investigations from tomorrow. I've spent these last few hours thinking about Gordon and his daughter, to try and tie things up.
She leaned forward.
Let me give you a scenario, then tell me what you think.
She took a breath.
Okay, if Avril is still alive, she needs to know that the man who terrorized her is dead. And the only people who know that the mystery man is Gordon Hammond are those involved in our inquiry. That is us, the Quintin Ordyke victims, their parents and associated villagers like the doctor and his wife. I am suggesting that if she was scared enough to run away from her father, she might still be living in mortal terror of him coming back. There was no body, and as Sergeant Barnes always said, that terrible uncertainty never allows you to rest.
She could be anywhere, ma'am.
She may well have put some distance between herself and Quintin. She might have even gone abroad like the Cartwright girl.
Absolutely, Yvonne. Or she could have stayed within range of what was going on at home. Keep an eye on things. Scan the local papers, listen to the gossip, so Daddy wouldn't catch her out.
Cat gave a soft whistle. But, Mom, she was only just 15 when she left. And it was the '80s, not the present day. I mean, nowadays the 11-year-olds are all managing their own online bank accounts and comparing the superiority of £170 Air Jordans over £160 Nike Shox trainers, but how would she have survived back then?
Nicky looked at the notes of her interview with Dr. Draper. The doctor said she was tall and well-built for her age. She could easily have passed herself off as a 17-year-old school leaver. Those are his words, not mine. And she was very bright. Everyone agrees on that. He also said that in the months before she disappeared, she spent a fair bit of time with a group of older kids who lived in the West Saltaby area. He saw her with them several times. She looked at Kat and Yvonne. Which ties in with what Cyril Roberts said, that she made new pals in Saltaby and went to dances with them. Nicky stared at the scored and worn surface of her temporary desk. What worries me is the terrible effect the past has had on the victims. If they were so traumatized that they never got over it, what the hell would his own daughter have suffered? She did a quick calculation. She would be 47 now, wouldn't she? Not much older than the others. And look at their mental state. We have to work on the premise that she is still alive and we have to find her. She needs to know everything that has happened, and that after 30 years we finally have her father's body. She should know that he was murdered. We need to give her closure.
What if she doesn't want to be found? Asked Kat quietly.
Then I guess we won't find her, will we? But we have to try. Kat, tomorrow I want you to start from the premise that a mother helped her run away. You have the old family address in Cambridge. First thing, get down there and see if there are any old neighbours still living there. Anyone who knew Gladys Hammond. See if she had any young visitors around that time. It's a long shot, but worth a try. Kat nodded. I agree, and I'll check on those new friends from West Saltaby. See if the doctor knew who they were. If not, PC Royal could help by asking the locals. Maybe one of her contemporaries might know where she went. It will only take one good memory to get me the start I need. Yes, ma'am, leave that with me. She looked hopefully at Nicky. Any chance of help if I get a lead? Officially, no. I have direct orders to assign all my resources to the present investigations. Unofficially, keep me updated and I'll see what I can do. Nicky winked at her. If Ben or Yvonne were to spend the odd hour working with you, I doubt anyone would notice. She stood up. Now, get off home and get some rest. Nicky closed her office door and went downstairs to the place she was now affectionately referring to as her grotto. Joseph sat alone at his desk, apparently unaware of her entry. Penny for them. He looked up sharply. Clearly his thoughts had not been happy ones. Sorry, I was daydreaming. But not beautiful dreams, I suspect. More like nightmare. He rubbed his eyes. I just don't know what to do. Nicky sat down opposite him. You do know the timing stinks, don't you? I could really do with you performing at your best right now, not going into emotional meltdown. Don't you think I don't know that? That's one of the reasons I'm feeling this way. I'm not performing as I should, and I know it. I'm letting you down, and I hate that. But I can't just dump her.
It could be just what she needs.
Had you considered that? A shot like that might well galvanize her into getting her act together. You've tried being kind and patient with her, and it hasn't worked, so try a different tack.
Nicky stopped, before she said too much. Joseph looked at her without speaking. For once, Nicky didn't know what he was thinking. After a while, he just sighed.
You could be right, Nicky. But I don't want her to shift all this angst onto Tamsin. This is my girl's honeymoon, and it should be special. She shouldn't spend it worrying over her mother.
Nicky stared at her desk. This was not going to be easy, but there was a double murderer out there somewhere.
Dear friend, this is going to hurt me more than it hurts you. I think you had better take a few days off, Joseph, and sort this out one way or another. Frankly, you are no use to me right now. While you were out mopping up Laura's crocodile tears, I was hauled over the coals in the super's office. We need to buckle down and do some proper police work before there's another death.
She stood up and looked down at him, saw his shocked expression. I'm sorry, Joseph, but that's the way it is.
Nicky left, fighting back her tears. But then she caught a glimpse of the whiteboard and the photographs of the two mutilated women, and she knew she had done the right thing.
Chapter 16 Nicky was just leaving the police station when Yvonne Collins called out to her.
"Mom, something's happened you should know about."
"I thought you'd gone home ages ago." Nicky looked at Yvonne's worried expression. "What's wrong?"
"It's George Ackroyd, Mom. One of the Quintin child victims. I've just heard that he's hung himself."
"Oh, no." Nicky exhaled loudly. "Who is attending?"
Yvonne gave her an apologetic half-smile.
Well, I said we would..."
"Come on, then."
The super's instructions rang in her ears. No more sudden deaths. But they had only interviewed George Ackroyd a short while ago, and now he was dead. To hell with it. She had no choice. Blue and white tape stretched across the entrance to the dingy grey building in Cole Lane. Nicky spoke to the uniforms outside.
Who found him?
The shopkeeper from Churchill Avenue rang his mum. Macroyd had placed an order but never collected. He sent his lad round, but he couldn't get in. The shopkeeper knew about his agoraphobia, so when he phoned him and got no answer, he rang us, and we forced an entry. They lifted the ribbon for Nicky and Yvonne to enter. A grim-faced uniformed sergeant was waiting on the landing.
"Doctor's here, Mum. They're just about to cut him down."
"When did it happen?"
"Nobody saw him after our visit yesterday. He rang his grocer friend Ravi earlier that morning and said he would collect his order before he closed at midnight. But he never showed."
"Who's the doc on call today?"
"Dr. Sylvia Caulfield, Mum. His own GP was unavailable."
Nicky nodded. Good. She had been trying to find an excuse to have a word with Dr. Caulfield. The stair carpet had faded to a grubby, indistinct colour. It blended perfectly with the dingy, washed-out wallpaper and chipped paintwork. George Ackroyd's flat was on the top floor. Nicky stepped up onto the landing. George's apartment door was wide open, and a cluster of men were setting the body down on the floor. Standing slightly to one side was Dr. Sylvia Caulfield. The doctor was taller than Nicky, but in contrast to the dark shade she favoured, Sylvia was dressed in vivid, flamboyant colours. Nicky thought she looked like a strange, exotic bird, caged in some gloomy hold.
"Nicky! Excellent!" Sylvia stepped out onto the landing. "How are you? I haven't seen you for ages. The one time we were always bumping into each other."
"And on most of those occasions I seem to remember you trying to empty my bank account in aid of some new piece of hospital gadgetry."
"Most likely, and I'm sure your ample salary never felt a thing. Now, as for that poor soul..."
She glanced back over her shoulder. "It's most definitely a suicide. Even while he was still hanging there, I could see the characteristic inverted V-shaped bruise on his neck. It was a most determined effort, too. He had gone up into the attic and tied the rope around one of the roof rafters. I obviously haven't looked too closely at the rope, but it looked like he used a pretty professional knot. It paid off. He actually did break his neck. Quite a feat for an amateur." Nicky began to feel light-headed. She always hated hangings. They were brutal and horrible to see. And as Sylvia had just said, they were rarely successful. Most suffered terribly. Rather than breaking the neck and crushing the spinal cord as they intended, they choked and kicked their way into oblivion. She leaned against the wall, trying to make it look casual.
"Frankly, I think the medical examiner will find this a perfect example of a suicidal hanging."
Nicky made herself think of practical details.
"Do you have any idea how long he's been dead?"
"At a guess, well over 24 hours. Rigor mortis is resolved, body is flaccid. All in all, he's not very nice to know." She wrinkled her nose. "I hope the undertakers bring a body bag with a strong zip.
Speak of angels, the men in black are upon us. Hello, Len. How's the wife now?"
"Evening, Doc. Much better, thanks. Should be on her feet soon. I hear you've got a swinger for us."
Nicky stepped back. "We'll let you gentlemen do what you have to. Then we'll check the flat. It's too crowded up here." So much for her informal chat with Sylvia Caulfield. Downstairs, she and Yvonne breathed in the fresh, cool air and chatted to the sergeant.
"I knew him vaguely, Mum. He had that phobia thing that makes you a prisoner in your own home."
The officer twisted the blue and white tape through his fingers.
"Poor bloke had a right turn one night. Funny thing, that. He could go out at night when it was quiet."
He shook his head.
"Anyway, he was in the mini-mart. You know Ravi's place? Ravi reckoned he was fine, happily doing his shopping. Then all of a sudden he looks out the window and starts yelling and screaming. Ravi said a bit of a crowd had just gone past, probably chucked out from the blue ball, and it freaked him out. We calmed him down and got him home, made him a cuppa, like. He was a right mess."
"How long ago was that?"
"Oh, a month, 6 weeks. I can check in my old pocketbook if you like."
"When you have a minute, if you would, Sergeant."
"Hang on a minute, Mum. I think they're bringing him out."
They stepped back to make way for the black body bag, carried by several grunting, heaving men. It came slowly through the narrow doorway and into the waiting undertaker's van. Once again, Nicky and Yvonne climbed the stairs to the top landing. The flat was tidy, but devoid of all character.
"Cheerful little garret, isn't it?"
Dr. Caulfield shook her head.
"Any note?" asked Nicky.
"Certainly not in any obvious place," said the doctor.
"We'll have to give the room a thorough going over. We know a bit about him. He was helping us with some inquiries."
The doctor seemed to stiffen. Oh, Lord, I hope one of your minions didn't put the frighteners on him and send him over the edge.
I believe someone else had already done that, said Nicky.
Oh?
The doctor obviously wanted more. Sorry, Sylvia. Can't say at present. It's bad enough that he's topped himself during an investigation, although it really had little to do with him. He was an agoraphobic, and we suspect he had other problems as well.
Really? That's the commonest of all the phobias, you know. But it can keep the sufferer completely housebound. It could well have contributed to his decision to kill himself. Now, this investigation...
Nicky noticed a glint in the doctor's eye that she didn't quite understand.
Will it mean a police inquiry, if he was involved in an ongoing investigation?
Only the usual one for a sudden death. I very much doubt it will warrant anything more. He was not a suspect, not personally involved in any way. He was just helping us to build a picture of something that happened a long time ago. Nicky tried to be very careful with her words.
Let's hope that the picture wasn't too much of a nightmare for him.
In her bright clothes, Sylvia seemed to shimmer around the room. Her eyes darted from place to place as if she were fixing the room in her mind.
Are you working on the Madeline Prospero case, Nicky?
Her tone was slightly too casual. Nicky followed suit. They were playing a game now, and both were aware of it.
No, one of the other DIs is handling it, thank heavens. Nasty one, that.
Sylvia made no comment, her expression inscrutable.
Did you know her, Sylvia?
Not well. I had met her, and before you ask, I did know little Louise Lawson, poor kid. Frank and Maria were my patients before they moved into Greenborough Town. I used to treat Louise when she was a child. Sylvia's eyes bored into Nicky's. I do hope that whoever is handling the case will do a speedy and efficient job before that butcher strikes again. Nicky's tone was cool. If a few more people were willing to speak up about what they know, especially about Madeline Prospero, the police would be able to do a much more speedy and efficient job, I'm sure.
They stood facing each other in silence. Then the sergeant entered and asked Nicky what she would like him to do.
Seal it up, Sergeant. We're just leaving. I've phoned for a couple of detectives to come and bag up anything relevant. They'll need to inform any remaining relatives. His mother and father are dead, that I do know, but I'm not sure about any other family.
Nicky followed Sylvia Caulfield down the stairs, leaving Yvonne to assist the sergeant.
Softly, Nicky addressed Sylvia's retreating back. I believe there is a lot more to the Prospero investigation than has come to light, Sylvia. I'm not heading up the case, but I can pass on information. It can come from any source, even an anonymous one. The murder team can only catch her killer if they know the real Madeline. So far, they don't know her at all. They made their way down, their footsteps echoing in the stairwell. When they reached the bottom, Sylvia turned and brought her face close to Nicky's. Then she turned away and went out into the street. When she reached her car, she called back,
"Naturally, Inspector, I shall keep my ear to the ground. I may even hear one or two anonymous voices."
In a flash of bright colour, she was gone. Nicky watched the car until it was out of sight.
"Ma'am, the CID chaps are here. Can they go up?"
the sergeant asked. Nicky nodded to the sergeant, beckoned to Yvonne, and they returned to the car. Nicky sat for a while, gazing out through the windscreen, and then her mobile rang. Unknown number.
"I'm sorry to call you like this, but you did give me your number, and..."
The speaker sounded hesitant. It took Nicky a second or two to recognize Sally King's lisp. It was Bert Gilmore's daughter. Sally asked if they could meet as soon as possible. Nicky glanced at her watch. She had nothing else planned, did she?
"Okay, Sally. I'll drive over to Skegness straight away."
"Thank you, Detective Inspector. I really appreciate that. Do you think I could see you somewhere else? Actually, I am in Greenborough at the moment. There are some seats at the back of the marketplace, just in front of the parish church. Would you meet me there?"
Nicky agreed. Sally King obviously didn't want her family to hear what she had to say.
"Vonnie, would you drive back to the station? Then you get away. I'm going to meet with old Bert Gilmore's daughter. She sounded quite on edge about something."
"I'm happy to come along," said Yvonne.
"No, I've got this one covered. You get home. I'll be needing you bright and early tomorrow."
Sally sat alone on a wooden bench, looking cold and miserable. She was wearing faded blue jeans, a creamy, chunky knit sweater, and a thick, waxed jacket.
"Shall we go inside the church, Mrs. King? It stays open until 8, and you look frozen,"
Nicky asked.
"No, I'm okay, really. Here is fine.
Sally looked around, as if afraid of someone listening. She spoke in a high voice, little more than a whisper.
Did I mention that I am doing a counselling course?
3-year, person-centred course, isn't it? Sally King stared down at her desert boots.
And one of the requirements is that you have to go into therapy yourself. I attend counselling every week here in Greenborough. It's very important that you feel totally comfortable with your therapist, and I wasn't very happy with my first one, so I changed to someone else.
She swallowed and took a deep breath.
Well, as often happens, old stuff, issues from the past, have started to come up.
She stopped speaking, and Nikki waited while she composed herself.
Silly, isn't it? I chose this sort of counselling because it encourages people to develop self-knowledge without delving into complex childhood experiences. It is a humanistic psychology that lets you take responsibility for your life.
She sniffed and dabbed at her nose with a tissue.
And what happens? I find I've got deep, dark secrets lurking so far down that I didn't know they fucking well existed.
Her voice dropped.
I'm so sorry, Inspector. I never swear.
Nikki smiled at her. Don't worry. I've heard far worse than that. Often it's coming out of my own mouth.
But not from me. It's just that this has really got to me.
Can I help? Is it something you can talk about? Nikki spoke gently. Sally cleared her throat.
When we spoke before, you were asking me about my childhood, Detective Inspector. I believe that I may have inadvertently told you some untruths.
She closed her eyes.
I was attacked. I did tell you that much. I thought it was a dog. At least, that's what my father always said. I think something awful happened to me in that churchyard, something that I blocked out so successfully that it's only now, when I'm in my 40s, that it's coming to the surface.
Does your husband know about this, Sally?
Not yet. I will tell him, though. The thing is, I've started having nightmares.
Sally swallowed again and blinked.
I get the feeling that the truth about what happened in Quinton is about to come out, Inspector, and I'm frightened. You see, it's not just the fact that I was attacked. I may have witnessed other things, too.
Sally's hands were trembling violently. Nikki gently took them in hers.
Come on, you look like you need a hot drink. Let me take you back to the station for a coffee. I have a private office, and we can continue there if you're up for it. Not really. I have to get home. My husband sorts the kids out while I'm here for my sessions. They're teenagers now, but I still like to be around for them in the evenings.
Her eyes were wide, full of both fear and bravery.
You see, Inspector, my kids, my husband, my home life are everything to me. I love them all so much it hurts. I don't want to upset or worry them, but I am going to tell them everything that I believe may have happened. With the support of my counsellor, I intend to consult a hypnotherapist. I need to know what happened. My own parents lied to me. In fact, most of Quinton O'Dyke lived one constant lie. I won't let that poison spread to my precious family.
I applaud your courage, Mrs. King. I know that refusing to confront the past can cause damage both now and in the future. All I can say is that I really think you are doing the right thing.
Sally smiled bitterly. I am relying on the one thing that failed me as a child. The honesty of parents. I just pray that with their support, I can deal with whatever happened. Detective Inspector, I was wondering if you would attend the session. I might only be able to go through it once. If you were there and heard what I have to say and perhaps taped it, then I could start to let go and heal.
If that's what you want, and if your family agrees, of course I will. Sally King squeezed Nikki's hand and stood up. She looked determined now, more resolved.
Right. I will get the family together tonight, and then make the appointment. Is there any time that would be inconvenient for you?
My life is flexible, Mrs. King. I never know what is happening from one moment to the next, so I'll make time. You just tell me when and where, and I'll be there. And Sally, it's probably better if you don't tell anyone else about this. I don't want to frighten you, but if the hypnotherapy works, you will be the only victim to have faced the truth. Some people have spent their whole lives keeping Quinton's nasty secrets under wraps, and they might not like you throwing off the cloak.
Sally pushed her hands into her jeans pockets. I'd already worked that one out. It's one of the reasons We are stuck around the back of this church and not in the tasty toasty with a cup of tea and a scone. My counsellor, my family and you, D.I. Galena. And that's where it stays. This therapy is for me, so I can get at whatever is trying to come out before it gets to me. It's not for anyone else. I just want you there in case it transpires that whoever is responsible for what happened is still around to pay for it. I understand that. Now, just one more thing before you leave. Sally, I think you should know about this before you read it in the papers. Did you know George Ackroyd at all? She smiled affectionately. Little Georgie was a bit younger than me. He was a sweet kid. I used to try to look out for him after his mum died, but I haven't seen him for years. I think he suffered with his nerves. Nicky wondered how to respond. Sally clearly did not remember that George had also been a victim. I'm really sorry, but we found him dead this morning, Sally. I believe he took his own life. Do you know if there were any brothers or sisters? Sally looked shocked. Georgie, dead. She seemed confused for a moment, as if an old memory had flared up, and then disappeared. No, he had no close family. Both of his parents were only children. We always said that Georgie was the only boy in school, not to have any brothers, sisters, aunties or uncles, and nor mother either. He cared very much for his dad, didn't he? Sally grunted. I suppose he had to. He didn't have anyone but that bully. I saw the bruises on that kid. But I really have to get off now, Inspector. I'll call you, okay? Sally King crossed the market square towards her car. There goes one brave lady, thought Nicky. But an uneasy feeling gnawed away inside her. She just hoped that Sally's plans would stay secret. By the time all the women had managed to escape their evening duties and drive out to the country house, it was already 9:30. There was no laughter, no chat, and no one attempted to make light of the situation. Sylvia Caulfield handed round drinks, and then they sat in silence, waiting. Sylvia strode to and fro before them, her long purple skirt swirling round her ankles. The situation is this. Two of us are dead. I include Louise because she is Maria's daughter. The women shook their heads and murmured. I spoke with D.I. Nicky Galena today. I am certain she knows about Madeline. I have called this meeting to ask you all a question. Is your need to keep your sexuality secret more important than saving your life? We appear to be in great danger, and so are our loved ones. It is not being overdramatic to say that the decision we make tonight will be a matter of life or death. Isn't there any other way? This was a teacher at the local sixth form college. Our head is really homophobic, and I love my job. She tailed off.
If my husband finds out that I have a woman lover, it will kill him.
Carla Hunt, the manager of a local import company, looked horrified. Zena Paris asked if they were going to involve the whole of the Briar Patch Club or restrict the vote to a select few. Sylvia did not hesitate. I would strongly advise opening it to the whole group. After all, we all face the same threat.
I need time to consider,
Greenborough lawyer Celia Kennington said above the murmuring voices. A decision to speak out could destroy the careers of many of us and their position in society. Families might be broken apart. This has to be very carefully thought out. Sammy ran a hand through her short crop of graying hair. If we involve the other members, we would be a considerable force if we were to decide to try and track the killer ourselves. Sylvia moved among them, topping up glasses. Time is not on our side. We cannot afford to procrastinate. If you are in agreement, I'm going to suggest that tonight we vote on whether to put this to the whole club or keep it to ourselves. Then we can think about the main decision at home. May I just say that Maria Lawson will naturally not be with us for the foreseeable future? I spoke with her today, and she sent thanks to you all for your flowers and messages of sympathy. Now, if we are ready, a show of hands, please. The women drove away, back to their other, more public lives. Many wondered if they had done the right thing by voting to involve the whole club. Chapter 17 Nicky drove home to Cloud Fen. She saw the dark silhouette of Joseph's Knot Cottage appear on the horizon and felt a terrible sadness. She had not wanted to speak to him the way she had, but right now there were more important things than Joseph's ex-wife and her bloody dramas. Joseph was not yet home, and the place was in darkness,
something she rarely saw. Outside work, they were nearly always together. More often than not, they ate together and sometimes sat long into the evening, talking about cases or just chatting comfortably. She pulled into the driveway of Cloud Cottage Farm, parked her car and sat in the evening quiet. She had believed that when Tamsin and Niall got married, things would be even better for her and Joseph. It had been a wonderful few months, seeing the two youngsters preparing for the wedding and buying their very first home. Then Laura had turned up and put an end to everything. When it became too difficult for her, Nicky had taken a two-week holiday with her mother, Eve. Nicky never took holidays. The break had been wonderful. She and her mother had really got to know each other, and they became much closer. She would not have swapped that time for anything. But she kept wishing. Wishing that Joseph were there with her. Wished he was by her side when she walked on the beaches and ambled through the olive groves. She had gone away to try to make sense of things. It hadn't worked. Nicky threw open the car door and stepped out into the cold, dark night. She stared up into the sky and listened to the sounds of the marsh whispering away around her. She felt unbearably lonely. She opened the door and the warmth and comfort embraced her like welcoming arms. She belonged here on Cloud Fen, in this very farmhouse. But did Joseph, too, belong? For the first time, she really wasn't sure. She took off her coat and hung it up. Her phone rang, shattering the hush.
Nicky Galena!
Mum, please forgive me for phoning, but Kat said she thought you would want to know what I've found out.
Ben?
Nicky walked through to the kitchen and switched on the lights.
Is it about Millicent?
Still holding the phone, she took a bottle of wine from the fridge.
Yes, I think I've had a breakthrough.
Nicky switched her phone to loudspeaker and went to get a glass.
Fire away.
Christchurch police in New Zealand traced Millicent's employment records and found that she was married and then divorced and moved down to Dunedin. They gave me her address and I rang Dunedin police. They went round and a neighbour told them she was away for 3 weeks visiting her father in England.
Bingo! Well done, Ben. So it was her that old Fred tied it up for.
She poured her wine.
So why didn't she turn up?
That I don't know. But I do know that she now goes by the name of Ellen MacDonald. She kept her married name after the divorce and ditched Millicent in favour of her mother's name, Ellen.
Well, you've been busy. Well done.
She smiled to herself. If Ben was trying to make a good impression, he was certainly going about it the right way.
I checked the flight passenger list from New Zealand, and she definitely checked her luggage in. Now I know her name, I'll get on to immigration here in the morning. More than that I can't say, but it's a start, isn't it?
It certainly is.
And tell Kat to stop prompting you. I can hear her in the background. I'm delighted with what you've achieved today. Good night, you two. And see you bright and early, okay?
She ended the call. Where was Millicent? Or should she say Ellen? It would appear that she had left home, boarded a plane, and vanished. Nicky took a long sip of wine and sat down. This did not bode well. Joseph sat opposite Laura in the lounge of her hotel. He had refused point-blank to go up to her room.
The thing is, Joe, there's nothing left for me in Scotland. I'm going to sell up and make a clean break from my old life with Gavin.
Alarm bells began to clang in Joseph's head. Where exactly was she planning this new start?
What do you think?
Joseph nodded slowly.
It's a good thing to put him behind you. But what about all the friends you made in Scotland?
We didn't have that many friends. I was working away such a lot that when I was home we would spend time together. Just the two of us.
She pouted.
There's not really anyone I would miss much.
And your work? Surely you'll be able to get back to that soon. You are very good at what you do. There will be offers from other companies.
Then I will be travelling again. But I need a base.
The alarm bells reached a crescendo.
And I'd love to be closer to Tam, like you are.
Joseph sipped his juice and said nothing.
And if I was somewhere local, Tam or you could keep an eye on my house when I was away working, couldn't you?
Joseph stared at her over his glass. She was still a beautiful woman, but there was little left of the girl he had fallen in love with all those years ago. She had changed beyond all recognition. He suddenly realized that he actually didn't like her very much.
To be brutally frank, Laura, I don't think that's a very good idea.
Her eyes narrowed for a moment, and then she smiled coldly.
Now why doesn't that surprise me?
I work long hours, Laura, and I love what I do. I did not choose to live near Tamsin. She chose to live near me.
He returned her icy stare.
Tamsin is not here to run around after me. I'm here only, if she ever needs me, to help her.
Oh, and we mustn't forget your perfect little life with D.I. Nikki Galina, must we? She rolled her eyes, although I'd never thought of you as a celibate. Platonic. Ha! Joseph took another sip of his drink, and then calmly said,
I have no interest in how you conduct your life, Laura, so I suggest you keep your nasty comments about mine to yourself.
Laura's eyes widened. Oh, Joe, I'm so sorry. She gave an exaggerated sigh. I don't know what comes over me these days. I think I'm just so hurt over Gavin that everything I do or say comes out wrong. Forgive me.
Joseph was beginning to see what Nikki had meant.
How can you be so wrong about someone, Joe? Gavin was the sweetest guy. He looked after everything while I was away, and he made me feel like $1 million when we were together. Even the few friends we did have thought he was wonderful. How did he manage to fool everyone? All he really wanted was my money and a great lifestyle.
Joseph put down his drink and sat up abruptly. How does someone manage to fool everyone? The words echoed in his head. Fool everyone. Laura, look, I'm sorry, but I have to go. I have an important call to make.
He stood up.
I'd think very carefully before you start checking estate agents' windows, okay? I don't think there is as much here for you as you may imagine.
Joseph walked away. There was something rather satisfying about seeing Laura's mouth hang open like that. Nikki was growing impatient. How many more times would the phone ring? She had fielded one call after another. Her mother had rung with the disappointing news that her art club friend had withdrawn her invite to the Briar Patch. Temporarily, of course, dear, but we need to sort out a few problems at the club first. Nikki was actually rather relieved. Eve, however, told her daughter that she'd been looking forward to a bit of excitement. Then her cousin Denise had phoned. She hoped Nikki hadn't forgotten about going round one evening. Now it was ringing again. With a grunt, she answered it.
Nikki, it's me, Joseph.
Nikki's stomach muscles tensed.
Hi. Can I call round?
Now.
I'm in town, but yes, I'm coming straight home. 15 minutes?
Sure. She thought he sounded oddly excited.
Have you eaten yet?
He asked.
Haven't had time. The phone hasn't stopped all evening. Then I'll grab something quick from Mario's. See you soon.
Nikki sat staring at the receiver. He had sounded like the old Joseph. Nikki told herself not to get too hopeful. Laura still lurked in the wings. Half an hour later, Joseph set down a bulging carrier bag on her kitchen table.
Mario boxed up your favourite, the leek and potato frittata. I've got a new recipe that he wants to try out, some sort of baked rigatoni.
Nikki took the plates from the cupboard. She noticed that her hand shook slightly. Joseph dished up the food and accepted a glass of wine. And then he sank down into a chair and gave a loud sigh.
Oh, God, what an absolute idiot I've been.
Wasn't me that said that. She grinned at him, although the thought did cross my mind.
Well, I'm back on track now, truly, and I'm not taking time off.
Nikki gave a broad smile. Thank heavens. I wasn't sure how I was going to cope without you.
I gather we are back on the Prospero investigation full-time.
Officially, although I'm keeping Kat and a bit of part-time help on the Gordon Hammond case.
That's what I wanted to talk to you about.
Joseph dug his fork into the pasta.
What if Gordon Hammond was completely innocent? What if the whole village was wrong about him, and he had done nothing at all?
And Cyril Roberts was right. Joseph nodded.
Yes. So why would he take the flak for something so terrible and not protest his innocence?
Because he was protecting someone? Nikki frowned.
Exactly. I think he knew whoever was killing the animals and abusing the kids, and was protecting him.
But he only had one friend that we know of, and that was Cyril. Joseph looked at her.
Maybe we don't know enough about the men of Quintin O'Dyke. Or maybe it was Cyril. After all, his wife did leave him, and his daughter has very little to do with him. And he lives on the outskirts of the village.
Like a pariah, murmured Nikki. But he seems like such a lovely old man.
People are not always what they seem.
Joseph drank some wine and stared into the glass.
And his defense of Gordon makes the whole thing ring true.
Nikki mused. How tall would you say Cyril is?
About 5'8". He's certainly not tall for a man.
So we could have killed Gordon.
And Avril?
Nicky shook her head. I'm coming around to the idea that Avril is still alive. Kat is working on that now for me. Somehow that poor kid was subjected to some awful things, either from her father or her father's best friend. I'm certain she was either a victim or an unwilling witness to unspeakable abuse.
So she ran?
She ran. My question is, did she get out in time, or is she as damaged as her fellow victims? Joseph sat back.
I dread to think.
They sat on in comfortable silence. Nicky wanted to ask what had happened to Laura, but kept her curiosity to herself. Joseph would tell her when he was ready. Instead, she told him about the death of George Ackroyd, her talk with Sally Gilmore, and Ben's progress with tracing the missing girl Millicent, now Ellen.
How'd you feel about an evening round at my cousin's place?
Joseph's eyes lit up.
Denise and Rosemary? Great. Will there be food? Den is a fantastic cook.
Nicky smiled.
Praise indeed. If she knows you are coming, she'll kill the fatted calf.
Then don't tell Tamsin. She'll have a fit. When are we invited?
Tomorrow. And I have an ulterior motive. Rosemary is one of the founder members of the Briar Patch Club. Nicky raised an eyebrow.
Ah, oh, sneaky.
She'll have to be interviewed anyway, so we'll do it gently. Over a glass of wine.
I'm with you on that.
Nicky picked up her phone and called Denise.
Sorted. 7 o'clock, okay?
Joseph nodded. He looked at Nicky.
This feels so good. I feel as though I've been possessed by some alien that drained all my spirit and energy. Now.
Welcome home, Joseph. Nicky raised her glass. And stay this time. Yes?
Oh, yes.
Chapter 18. Nicky hung her jacket on the fancy bamboo coat stand that had miraculously appeared overnight.
We have split the interviews with D.I. Jill Mercer, and we will share anything of interest.
She passed out the list of women's names.
We'll work in pairs. Joseph will come with me, Dave with Ben. Kat will stay on the other case for the time being.
She looked at Ben.
Before you start, tie up what you have on Millicent, and then pitch in with Dave, okay? Yvonne, you stay with Dave until Ben's free, then maybe you'd like to spend a bit of unofficial time with Kat.
No problem, Mom.
Yvonne smiled.
I like unofficial time.
You look a bit worried, Ben. Problem?
Nicky said. Ben looked downhearted.
I just get the feeling I'm going to hit a blank with Ellen Millicent.
Bad feeling about her?
Very bad feeling, Mom.
If it makes you feel any better, I feel the same. Just do what you can.
She glanced at the clock.
Back here at lunchtime and we'll see what we have. Go to it.
Kat got off to a good start. Within the hour she had located an old neighbour of Gladys Hammond's sister. The old lady confirmed that Gladys never had visitors. Apparently Gladys's sister had a very nice home in quite a posh residential area. When Avril had gone missing, she allowed Gladys to have the annex. The front door to the annex was right opposite the neighbour's window, and the old girl reckoned that she never saw a single visitor. Kat looked at her notes. The aunt was very friendly with the neighbour, but when Gladys Hammond arrived, the neighbour wasn't encouraged to visit any more. She said that her sister's nerves were shot, what with the child disappearing and her husband taking to drink like that, so she needed peace and quiet. She never saw anyone visit, other than the police from time to time, and Gladys never went outside her front door, not even to shop. Kat closed her notebook. She had asked the neighbour if she knew why Gladys lived in the annex rather than sharing the house with her sister. The old lady thought they spent the day together, but Gladys preferred to sleep in the ground floor granny flat. She had taken to sleepwalking and was frightened of sleeping upstairs. So, if Gladys never left the house, then she couldn't have helped her daughter run away. Kat sat back and contemplated her mammoth workload. She decided to start with another visit to Quentin Odyke. She needed to know the truth about Avril Hammond and Delia Roberts's friendship. Either Dr. or Mrs. Draper might be able to provide it.
Got a minute, Kat.
The uniformed sergeant, who had attended George Ackroyd's death, was standing in the doorway.
Sure, come in, Sarge.
I remember this place from the old days. Well, you look comfortable enough.
Sergeant Keane glanced at the wall clock.
Isn't that the...
Shut up, Sarge, or I might be forced to lie to you.
Never understood why the men's room needed a clock in the first place.
My thoughts precisely. Now what can I do for you?
Your boss asked me to find the date when George Ackroyd